interviewing the leading private equity executives and unlocking the secrets of success. Welcome to the Private Equity Podcast with Alex Rawlings.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Jun Hung Heng, the founder and chief investment officer of Crescent Cove Advisors, private equity firm focused the majority on the lower to middle market across TMT. Welcome, and thank you for sharing your insights with us, Jun.
Alex, thanks for having me on.
Perfect. So, Jun, for those of us who don't know you, give us a 60 to 90 second breakdown, please.
Absolutely. I grew up in Singapore. You know, I was there till I was 21, finished my military service. Post that, got my college degree from Michigan, and post-graduation, joined Bear Stearns, and that was the start of my finance career. You know, I was doing banking for a few years. Post that, joined a couple of hedge funds. I was spent the buy side for around 7 years before I started my own firm, Crescent Cove. And yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. So what mistake do you see either private equity firms or their portfolio companies making, and what actions would you take to correct them?
So I think one common mistake that I see for private equity firms that have good boards, right, and good board members is not taking feedback. And when they don't take feedback, when board members start disengaging and not turning up for board meetings, they start wondering why. So I think it's pretty common. We see this. But look, at the end of the day, boards exist for many reasons. But one reason is truly to help the management team. You know, I've seen good boards, bad boards, toxic boards. But at the end of the day, board members are there to... Most board members are there to help. And if there is certain things that they give feedback on, management should have internal discussions and take it seriously. So that is something that we have seen quite often.
I think feedback's an interesting point. It's something we've pushed very hard on. I think feedback has to go both ways. It both comes obviously, I don't like the hierarchy things, but in simplicity, for those listening, you know, it goes down, but it also has to come back up for businesses to change and businesses to move. And I think it's very difficult for a majority of leaders to actually take feedback from the people within the business, people outside the business, and be able to action that. So I think that's a really key point.
Yeah, you know, one thing is boards, you know, boards are made up for different reasons depending on where the company is, right? It's like if you're a private company, you raise capital from venture capital firms, growth equity firms, they have certain clauses that require them to be on the board so that they can oversee their investment. But look, at the end of the day, the interests might or might not align. But at the same time, the management picked them on. So that's a reason why, right? And of course, the relationship evolves, right? But if there is feedback, you know, that definitely should be some kind of management should definitely take it seriously and have discussions around it.
So looking at your background, as you know, I understand, obviously, you've worked on the credit side, you've worked on the public side, you've worked on distressed debt previously. What made you kind of move into, you know, what I'd regard as more traditional private equity? I know your firm's fairly diverse with regards to investment thesis, but what is it that made you move into this area? And I suppose, why have you stayed?
Yeah, that's a great question, Alex. I think, so I've worked in public markets and private markets. So we think about it in terms of private markets. It can be private debt, you know, growth equity, private equity. But what I really missed about the private market that made me move from public was the people. It's having the ability to learn from the founders, meeting, you know, people who have built their companies over years, you know, meeting young, aspirational people, founders who are trying to build their businesses with very little, you know, constraints or restraints from society. I think that is very, very exciting for me. And I truly miss the people part of the business. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, decided to focus mainly on the private markets.
Excellent. So, and from that, obviously, you've moved into the TMT space, which I think is a fascinating area, certainly, and an area which, you know, has obviously been around for an incredibly long time. But I think there's more and more private equity firms moving and being attracted by that area. What made you choose TMT to focus on for your firm?
I truly enjoy the innovation and the ideas of the people. And typically, people who are involved in technology are younger, and the vibrancy and the fearlessness to try to start something, it's just amazing, right? And then the constant innovation, and how does that translate to investing? Well, for us, right? Because the constant being an entrepreneur within like technology, you constantly require capital, because the proof of concept, because the even as the go-to-market strategy is that if it's something disruptive, there is so much ability to actually have grab market share before optimizing for cash flow. So within that whole period, there's actually a lot of ability to deploy capital and work alongside the founder. So that's one of the things that we, especially within private credit, there was something where we're like, hey, the venture and growth had grown so much. But when I started my firm, there was this big gap that the private credit market has not grown as much. And that's why we started a firm just basically focused on private credit. And eventually, as our companies grew, our opportunities that increased, we started moving into different other instruments, right? Investment instruments, such as growth and private equity.
And the technology space is obviously quite broad. What areas are you seeing that, you know, quite attractive at the moment that are fascinating for you? Obviously, I've seen your portfolio is quite broad itself. So is there any particular areas within technology that you're diving deep into at the moment?
Yeah, so we do have a very diverse portfolio. We do see a lot of different things. But my passion is truly, you know, technology within the automotive space. I think it stems partly because my father actually worked in the automotive industry as well.
Okay.
I still remember, you know, growing up, he was involved in the vehicles testing industry in Singapore, where certain, if you have an internal combustion engine car, at that point, you know, it was important that you go for small testing, right? So he was involved in that industry. And what's interesting about this, about the auto technology industry is it's really a convergence of two big sectors, right? One is the auto industry and the other one is technology. And with the ascent of Tesla in the late 2000s, suddenly automotive industry is realizing that we need to do something. And in early 2013, 2014, they started investing a lot in these OE companies started focusing a lot on technology. So, you know, there are a lot of changes, you know, talking about new safety systems, you know, electrifying of powertrains, you know, clean energy. So, you know, let me put it this way, right? Like Ford in the past 3 decades, they only had, you know, just a handful of new platforms. In the next 5 years, they're expected to have more than a few new platforms. This is how drastic the change is, right? So whenever there's constantly change, we think there's a lot of opportunity for us.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've seen quite a bit of that with looking at obviously autonomous drive and some of the businesses that are coming through already at growth equity stage. And they've got their software platforms and obviously anything from, we've done graphics on the actual vehicles right through to the sensor work. So there's some really interesting work done. Obviously, you know, big brand name within that is clearly Tesla, which brings together what I'd regard as so many different facets from technology. You've got a huge AI player, big data player, not just a electric vehicle manufacturer and battery technology. So yeah, it's really interesting that you're seeing a lot of growth in that from your side of things as well. One of the projects I was looking at you worked on, or one of the deals, was the Luminar software business, a real standout deal as it would appeal for you guys. So it clearly demonstrates you got in quite early, but tell us a little bit about that deal and how that went on.
So Lumina is an autonomous driving solutions provider. When we first invested in Lumina and met Austin, it was very different from what it was today. The biggest difference was Austin was probably 20 years old. And whenever we tell investors or potential investors that, you know, we back someone who is in the early 20s, especially not from this part of the world, people get very surprised. How can we actually back someone like that? So I think the age, the youthfulness of Austin, the CEO, was definitely one of those things that stood out. But that said, you know, I think, you know, he, when I first met him, he was just unique. His approach to things, he utilizes a lot of first principles. You know, some people call it the Aristotle first principles. Look, at the end of the day, he just likes to question a lot of different ways, assumptions that people have on doing certain things. And that gets very interesting when you actually see him apply those principles and learn certain complex topics quickly over a period of time, right? So I think that was one of the things that was very interesting. And for us, our relationship with him actually constantly evolved as well, right? Because initially it was like, okay, we need capital. And then 6 months later, it's like, okay, we need some help with hiring. And then it became, okay, and then 6 months later, we require certain non-dilutive capital, right? And for us as a firm, we have the full capabilities to help him out, right? And eventually post going public, he invited me to join the board to continue working with him as the listed company CEO. So I think it's, the relationship evolves and then the company evolves as well. But at the same time, that means us as investors need to constantly learn and evolve how we can help a company, you know, from the very start, from, you know, seed stage all the way up to, you know, a listed company.
Interesting. So, and one of the, obviously is the founder of Crescent Cove. I'm not going to let you get out of this podcast without talking a little bit about talent. You know, I speak with private equity, venture capital firms all over Europe, all over North America. And, you know, there's not one that's cracked it, or not one that I've come across anyway, but I suppose why would you be speaking to me regardless if you've cracked talent? How have you found hiring, growing a firm from scratch, supporting portfolio companies? What have you learned along the way? What mistakes have you made? What have you implemented? Give us a bit of an insight into that, please.
Yeah, Alex, thanks for bringing up. This is actually a very interesting topic. You know, first of all, I haven't done it for a very long time. I only started for about 6 years ago. There are definitely people who have done this for much longer and much better than we have in hiring. You know, but I think you know what we can share is our three broad experiences and lessons on talent in general. Right, I think one that is quite for someone who haven't. Was not built companies or seen companies grow is to understand that there will be churn in organization. That's number one. Talent pool will get wider. And as you grow the organization, as we grow the organization, the amount of talent that's available to us get wider. Right? That's one of those things where I think it's sorely missed. Number two is, yes, you know, as a small firm, we're trying to constantly, you know, apply first principles to for hiring needs, right? It's like, okay, if this guy has this experience, can we fit him into this other functional role? Because that's exactly what you need at this point, right? So I think one of the things we learned is don't try to reinvent the wheel, right? if there's parts of the car that you need to improve on, the wheel is probably the last thing you need to do. So that's one of the, that's the second thing that we learned, right? It's like, yes, there are certain tried and tested practices on the market. It makes sense to follow them. And third but not least, what we learned that this process constantly evolves, and eventually the firm starts to have some kind of identity, and we understand what is important to us. I think initially, you know, we think we know, but we really improve on our expectations and communicate that better as and when the firm grows.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one for a lot of people all around the world. I think it's just something that the firms that I see that do very well with it are just always learning from it. Every person that they hire, they learn from, they take feedback from, they develop from, and every person that they unfortunately doesn't work out, they do exactly the same. And I think it's looking back and going, oh, this person wasn't right, and blaming the candidate. Is there anything we could have found out during the interview process? Have we missed something? Is this culture fit not right? Is their experience not there? What has gone wrong? But then also looking a lot inwardly, as opposed to just, is the candidate right? But have we mismanaged expectations? Have we sold something here that wasn't the case? And what's allowed this person to basically not work out? Just making sure that you're kind of covering off all those areas. So that's kind of where I see is that constant learning and development and internal focus, rather than just, yeah, the candidate was rubbish and we just need to find someone else.
Yeah, absolutely right. Sometimes I feel that for smaller firms like ours, the emphasis is not enough. There's actually not a lot of support. I don't find a lot of support on trying to understand some of these issues to kind of learn along the way. But it's definitely fascinating. I find this process extremely fascinating.
No, absolutely. I very much enjoy it, hence the career choice. So you came across, as you mentioned, from Singapore. What led you, obviously, did education in the US, so I'm sure that kind of gave you a taste of things. But what made you move from Singapore to obviously, the United States?
Yeah, so I grew up in a family of four, and I am the eldest. I'm the only one who decided to leave. Not only for college, but actually, have my career outside of Singapore. All my other siblings are still in Singapore. So I think part of it is, the desire to actually experience something outside of Singapore and just live somewhere different. And of course, I think it's very similar for all big families. When you're the eldest, there's certain expectations and possibly some part of it is just, hey, I think I got to leave.
Your siblings have annoyed you enough to start to move away. That makes
sense. I think the expectations of your parents, right? And then it's the elders kind of like, okay, the first child is a learning experience for parents. And as parents get more experienced, it becomes easier on the other kids that are born. Don't get me wrong, it was a great experience, a great childhood, right? But it's just easier to leave.
Makes sense. So coming back to the talent perspective, what are the three kind of attributes that you believe make a top performer?
Yeah, so this is something where we it constantly evolves, because every firm at each stage requires different type of talent. All right. And of course, for each firm, it differs as well. For us, this is through experience, and with each candidate, we know what is important to us and what is not so important. So, I think there are three things that we really care about. One is turning up physically. I think in present day, we have seen situations where working remotely and having the option to work from home is more important than being physically here. So, that does not work for us. For us, being present and working in a team, it's very, very important. Number two is, we are results driven, right? If there are certain things that are being asked to be done within a certain timeline, it's important for someone to deliver, right? It doesn't matter what role you play. All right. If that is something that needs to be done within a certain time frame, either the person decides that executes it or tell us why it cannot be done. And thirdly is, I think this is something where for us as an investment firm, and we are in a field that constantly, constantly changes, is intellectual curiosity. Right? It's important to learn, right? Learning is a big part of what we do. It doesn't matter what role you are, what companies you're working on. There is something to be said, to be constantly learning about what works, what drives people, right? And just to name a few, right? There's so many things that we can be learning.
Yeah, I agree, obviously, with all those three. But, in the latter, with regards to that self-development, constant learning is a big value for us, certainly here. And interestingly enough, we've also struggled with the whole work from home. We tried we tried that, we've brought people in, and it's really not worked for us. I think certain cultures and certain businesses can struggle a little bit with that work from home type mentality. If you've got that kind, I don't know. I think for us, we've just got a kind of culture where I suppose it's unique. Every firm's going to say they're friendly and get on, and there's a real team environment. But I think with regards to the pace that we operate at and the kind of level that we operate at, I think that bounce off and that conversation, listening to others and learning from those, we've developed a lot of young people into what is a pretty senior exec type search industry. I think it's important to have that kind of office environment, albeit, you know, I'm not against trying it again, but interesting enough, it's something that hasn't worked out for us as well.
Yeah, you know, this work from home thing is widely talked about in the press and debated on whether what is the right way, on whether it's going to come back, whether it's not. But I think at the end of the day, each firm just had to decide whether it works for them or not and stick by it, right? It's pretty straightforward, right? If it works for you, great. If it doesn't, then it doesn't. It's pretty binary from where I sit. And of course, there are certain consequences that comes with it. You might have a smaller talent pool. You might have a larger talent pool, and you know, make decisions based on that. It's, you know, it's pretty straightforward from my point of view.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think something that we've done is we've just given people more flexibility. If you're here, then, you know, majority of your time is in the office. If you need to work from home, then you work from home the odd days and you sort things out and whatever else. But I think it's, I agree, completely binary from that perspective. So what do you love about private equity industry, and equally, what do you dislike?
I think what's great is, one thing interesting about business is you really get to meet interesting people, right? We're constantly surrounded by people that driven, talented, experienced individuals. And with them, you constantly have the ability to learn from them, right? Every call I have, it's an opportunity to learn, right? And that's one of the biggest things that I really enjoy about the industry. And as you mentioned earlier, right, like why did I decide to move into the private market is precisely because of the people. It's just more interesting.
What is it that you dislike about the industry?
Well, sometimes it's the people too. It goes both ways, right? When you meet great people, it's fun. You know, it's, you know, a lot of optimism. People are trying to grow, right, and understand how you can help them grow the business. But of course, sometimes, you know, it doesn't always work out that way, and you have to deal with a little bit. You know, you can't just walk away, right? Yeah. So then there are certain consequences to doing it. So you kind of take the good and the bad.
Yeah, makes sense, both positive and negative. So what are your influences? What do you read? What do you watch? What do you listen to?
Yeah, I'm a kind of more experienced person, right? And one thing, you know, I know we keep going back to this. It sounds like a broken record, but you know, I tend to listen to what people, you know, tend to listen to. At the end of the day, I'm surrounded by, you know, such strong CEOs, you know, fellow board members, new CEOs that we are looking to work with, you know, founders that have built their companies, be it, you know, first job out of school, not going to college, and understanding what drives them to do certain things, understand how this impacts their family, how this impacts their view on the world. You know, what made them decide to build a firm? What kind of hardships did they go through? I think those are what influences me and how I built my business and how we want to invest on certain founders. Because at the end of the day, what I find is most critical is alignment of interests. You know, numbers can tell us a lot, but not the full picture, right? It is not really forward-looking. And forward-looking projections or estimates is really dependent on the motivation of the individual to drive it, right? Or the team. So for us, for me specifically, I like to see, you know, I like to read the human behavior, watch people's actions, and I kind of listen to what they have to say. So yeah, for me, it's more of an experiential person. You know, yeah, you know, of course, we can read a lot of different books. But what is most influential in the thinking is really the people around me.
Learning from others' experiences. And, you know, I think within private equity, we are surrounded by incredibly smart, incredibly experienced individuals. So obviously the right thing to do is to learn from them. So, Jun, if anybody wants to reach out to you following this, how best do people contact you?
Well, you know, you can go to our website, you know, crescentcove.com, and I think we do have an email address there. You can reach out via the email address.
Perfect. We'll put that in the show notes. So, well, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your insight. You leave us lots of value, lots of interesting thoughts to have with regards to the private equity industry, and really appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure's all mine. So as always, thank you very much for joining us, to all our listeners. And of course, should you ever need support with private equity professionals or portfolio executive hiring across Europe or North America, please do reach out to me at Real Selection. But till the next time, keep smashing it. And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Private Equity Podcast on www.raw-selection.com.